I dag intervjuer jeg Andrew Foxwell. Andrew driver Foxwell Digital, driver et nettverk med over 500 digitale sosiale mediebyråer rundt omkring i hele verden, og styrer også annonser for en del store amerikanske merkevarer. Jeg møtte Andrew for 7 år siden når vi holdt foredrag på samme scene på AdsCamp i Tyskland. Utrolig dyktig kar. Og jeg har en prat med Andrew for å forstå litt hvordan man skal tenke før nå Black Friday, Cyber Monday og inn i julesesongen. Og vi diskuterer også litt i forhold til hvordan man skal tenke rundt innholdsproduksjon fremover, hvordan små bedrifter kan bruke smartere måter på å få lagd alt det innholdet som kreves. Så her er det masse nuggets, så kos deg masse med min prat med Andrew Foxwell. Cool, so Andrew, we're now entering crazy times in terms of advertising, in terms of a market that maybe is a little bit overcrowded usually, but now for November, December, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
With the agencies you talk to and the clients you work with, how would you kind of describe the vibe or the expectations for the time coming up?
Yeah, I mean, the expectations are super high, right? I mean, I think people put all their eggs in this basket. And I think that there's a lot of planning that goes into this time period, both from a, you know, inventory, you know, perspective, and but also like ad creative and website changes and things like that. And yeah, so I mean, I think people are excited, certainly. When things are really good, they're really good on Meta. And when things are really bad, they're also really bad, you know? And I think October of this year, of 2023, has been, it's always hard. October is always slow because consumers know there are deals coming. People forget that. And, you know, I think you have to kind of set your expectations properly in this period of the year. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, I think the big theme for us this year is I think we learned early on when we did Black Friday, Cyber Monday, kind of end of November, Christmas type deals. There was a feeling that things had to be really complicated. They had to be, you know, new ads, and we had to launch a whole new website face and all this stuff. And what we've learned the last couple of years is actually what's working, just keep it running. And maybe change your website to have a site-wide discount, but to keep it simpler, right, than we think, which has been good and a lot easier. And certainly you can launch different creatives to your mid-level, you know, kind of people that are on your email list but have never bought or things like that. But I think it can be less complicated than you think. And I think a lot of times we overcomplicate it this time of year.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And I think people can get too caught into making things too complicated. So what about the offers, discounts, all that stuff? Here in Norway especially, there's kind of this fear of everyone wanting to get as much sales as possible. So the discounts are quite large and getting, I think personally, out of hand. Do you need big discounts to succeed in this period, do you think, or you just need smart ways of putting things together, or what's your thinking around that?
I mean, I think discounting is an entirely other, the thing that we as marketers and we as business owners, you only know discounting through the lens of the way you've seen it and the way that you've thought about it. So it's not, you know, we have to remember that discounting strategy actually is, there are entire courses on this written by people that are in PhD programs for, you know, MBAs, right? Like, that's important to remember as when it comes to discounting, because it can be really complex. Okay. So the things that I think about with discounting are, what is can your brand take discounting? And so just baseline, like, is it a good idea? And yes. If it's not a good idea, then how have you built the brand image over time, where instead of discounting, you're offering bundles or products together that you never would have, to incentivize the customer to make a purchase. Okay. So you could do, you know, you don't have to necessarily have a discount. I think if you're going to discount and you've proven that you can do discounting at a certain level, the thing you have to ask yourself is, how often have I discounted already? And how impactful is that discount going to be? So if I've been discounting all year, is it really going to mean anything when I discount, you know, if I've been discounting 10% all the time for new customers, is it going to mean anything when I go to 15? So I think you have to really, like, if you're going to discount, think about what level of discounting do you think you're going to be able to do? Yep. That's like the deepest that you can do, because it has to be a meaningful discount as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I think consumers are, they're moved by big discount numbers. And so you have to be confident that you're going to move a lot of volume if you are going to discount heavily. So in my opinion, like, discounting has to be in the neighborhood of, if you've never discounted all year, you can be in the 20 to 30% off range or something, right? But if you have been discounting, you need to be thinking more aggressively about how you're discounting while also bundling and raising AOV. That's my opinion. Like, I don't think that free shipping is nice, but I don't think is, you know, something that's going to, unless it's a free shipping threshold that you're raising. You know, I think these pieces hopefully aren't just being thought about now. And if they are being thought about now, I would be very cautious about discounting. I would be very cautious about how much you're going. And instead, I would be thinking about, what are the things that we have in our product selection that we know consumers buy together or would make sense to do together to buy something that's giftable? That's the other piece that I think is neglected and overlooked by a lot of people.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Last question around Black Friday, Cyber Monday kind of tactics. Is now the time to test new channels and broader things? Usually, most of the Norwegian e-commerce are running Google Ads, Meta Ads, and they might consider testing TikTok or Snapchat or something like that. Is Black Friday, Cyber Monday period a good place to start testing, to like dip your toes in the water, or should you wait to more calmer periods to do things like that, in your opinion?
I don't think it's a good idea to test. I think this is the type of, you know, time of year when you really want to focus on strategies you know are going to be lucrative and successful for you, and not try to overcomplicate it. You know, Q1's a great time to test a lot of new things, right? So that's when I would do that. That's when we traditionally do it. So no, I wouldn't do it at this point in the year.
So do what works and do more of that, and stay still in the boat in all other things of experimenting, going mm-hmm. crazy. Yeah, makes perfect exactly. sense. Perfect. Okay, so now I want to shift gear a little bit, because I've been fascinated, as a lot of other marketers, about, you know, all the AI progress we're making, generative AI stuff, watching closely how both Meta and Google are talking about, you know, creating creatives for you, looking at how Advantage Plus shopping campaigns or Performance Max is just doing a better and better job of, you know, staying stable and profitable. If you would to look a year or two into the future, if we don't think about creatives at the moment, but more of like, how much control do you think we as marketers have in terms of optimization, placements, bidding strategies, all that stuff? If you just had to guess, of course, it's impossible to know, but your gut feeling.
Yeah, I mean, clearly control is being removed for us in terms of actual lever pulling, right? In terms of the technical things that we were doing with ad buying, that's being removed. So from my standpoint, you're going to have less and less control. Even with the creatives that you're building, I think that they're going to be taking dynamic elements of it and putting the text and putting the video where they want and sizing it in the way that they want. So, you know, I think you have to become comfortable if you're going to be on these platforms, knowing that it's not going to look the way that you necessarily want it to. Right now, you know, if you're putting it into an Advantage Plus shopping campaign, for example, which is a, you know, type of campaign container on Meta, there's already being changed. I mean, creative is being changed, images are being changed. That's just like happening. There's not really not much you can do about that. So, you know, I mean, you can opt out of it for now, but I don't think you're going to be able to opt out of it forever. So you have to know that, I think you have to get a good sense of, you know, what are the ways that you are thinking about consumer psychology in your business? That's really the big one. What are the ways that you are thinking about how pitches are being made, about how you're hooking people in, and where are people in the journey? Do you have creative that speaks to different stages of where the customer is in their journey? So problem aware, problem unaware, solution aware, product aware. These are the types of things you want to consider, because that's how you're going to scale and spend. I mean, there's certainly technical things that you can do in terms of ad buying but it's more about the creative and how it leans into that, and becoming comfortable with that these pieces are going to be mixed and matched and look a little bit different. But if you're continuing to give the system new ways to hook in consumers that are based on where they're at in their cycle of knowing you, you're going to be more, it's going to be more lucrative, I think.
So kind of letting go a little bit of the control over the visuals. I have some clients who are like very, very brand sensitive and just wants total control over everything that's visual. And they're now being really challenged because, you know, all the Advantage Plus shopping campaigns, et cetera, are really performing really good, but they're losing control. And, you know, what's fascinating, most clients, you know, when they're seeing their own ads, it's usually the worst ones because they have a different pattern in terms of how they use the website. They never convert, all that stuff, right? So it's just throwing things at them. So I'm getting a lot of pushback and also like curiosity, because it's working really well, but it might not look like they want it to do. So it's mm-hmm. fascinating. Okay, but if we keep on losing control over which levers to pull, we're into then the next few years more of just being in control over the creative. We're not even that, because, you know, generative fail, I think Meta definitely gonna generate different backgrounds instead of the white backgrounds of products and all that kind of stuff. But mm-hmm. a small business that has limited resources, limited time, how should they think about content creation in terms of ads and marketing, you think, going forward? What would you be your advice thinking around that?
I think it's a mixture of two different things. I think it's a mixture of, you know, what is the brand voice that you're developing? So what are the ways that you are speaking to consumers about what your product or services solve for those customers? So that's just one thing, which is, you know, we used to say like, hey, buy this shirt, 5-star review, it's great, you know, but that only meets that person at one area of, you know, well, they know that they want a shirt, you know. It's like, what if an ad said something like, did you know shirts that are made of 100% cotton, you know, breathe 70% less than a merino wool shirt or whatever it is, you know. So you're bringing up the did you know, that's interesting, I didn't even know I needed a shirt, but I like that the merino wool shirt helps me breathe better. So I think it's a matter of what's the brand voice and how are you developing image, you know, creative and video and images that look more like something a friend would send you. And also, how are you integrating more professional looking shots so that you have a little bit of a mix? And then how are you also doing what we talked about before with the kind of where they are in the consumer awareness stages and how you're addressing those? So, you know, yeah. That's, you know, if they don't know that they need it, then they're problem unaware. If they know that there's a problem, they're aware of that problem. It would be, you know, do your shirts scratch you? Like that's, you know, are they itchy? That would be a problem aware way to address that. right? Then it's solution aware. Did you know that that Foxwell brand shirts have X number, you know, 1,000 more thread count than any other shirt, you know? So you're saying all these different pieces and you're hitting people depending on where they are on the journey. So I think if you're doing those two things and you have an influx of creative that looks more genuine, that looks less professional, that's good, along with having some stuff that is professional, so that when people are, you know, you're trying to get them to buy again, you're trying to get them to know it's a professional piece, that you have those that you can integrate. So, and that could be with services too, right? It could be, ways to think about that in terms of a service-based business is like, you have one that is videos of me as Andrew answering questions about your washer and dryer. Okay. But then the professional side would be a more studio shot interview, me talking about like why I started the business and why, right? So you're kind of reaching into two different places and having different levels of professionalism, but speaking to consumers no matter where they are on their journey.
I see, especially in the US, and it's starting to come a little bit in Norway as well, but user-generated content, getting, you know, customers to say nice things about you is getting more and more popular. But also it's starting to pop up a lot of small agencies who just basically help you create fake kind of UGC type of content, which again hits the it hurts the trust of the brand a little bit. So how would you kind of navigate true feedback from customers versus actors or something like that? And, you know, do you have any thoughts about like where UGCs are going, especially on TikTok? I feel I don't trust the messaging and the ads anymore. Maybe it's just the algorithm has turned bad on me, but what are your thoughts on the UGC?
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes just like any way that you try to address something in a quality fashion. So I think that in a short term, there's a lot of people that are out there in a short term and they're going to buy UGC that's created and it's fake. And they're going to try that out and say, well, it didn't work. But the people that we work with, and I know the people that you work with, like we're in this for the long haul. We're not going to try to do this cheaply. So, or you're not going to try to be some flash in the pan of creating user generated content, buy it and say you're done. So what I would say in this instance is really it's important to go towards this by sourcing creatives from your customers over time and incentivizing them to do that. And there are a lot of services that allow you to do this, and building affiliate programs and having a longer term strategy that gives you an influx of creative from people that actually have used your stuff. Yeah. And it pays them for it or gives them a discount for it. And that program will be more unwieldy to manage. It will be more work to manage it, but it's also a longer term foundational piece to a business now that I think will be more lucrative over time, because you're building it so that it's built on real stuff. And you know, in the United States, at least too, like there's been a crackdown and will continue to be a crackdown on fake UGC without the disclaimers. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think you want to be doing that. I think you want to be in the position where these are people that are real. And yeah, the videos might be bad. They might not look as good. They might be shot incorrectly, but they're your customers.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's even a lot of people that'll send out, you know, their strategy is sending out free product and then getting people to share it and talk about it. And even that, like, I don't know how I feel about that. To me, it's better off if you're incentivizing your real customers and talking to them, because you're also learning about what they like and don't like anyway.
Yeah.
And then you're able to take care of them that way. So that's kind of my take on that whole thing.
Something interesting, I think you said about kind of mixing the professional versus the more like homemade feel of things. Mm-hmm. Do you have any success? Have you had any success with, mixing user generated content in the same type of creative as your professional shots? I've seen Ezra Firestone doing this, for example. It's almost like a professional commercial cuts into UGC. Have you had an experience mixing it like in the same creative?
We have, you know, you can cut them in where it's a review and then it goes to basically, you know, it's a review from a customer and then it goes into like talking about the product, like a more, a commercial. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's all on the table, right? I think it just depends on, you know, if you're thinking about what do I need to do? How do it's like, you have to be able to source from both sides. And then if you, yeah, trying a combo, absolutely a great idea. Absolutely. So yeah, we have tried a few like combos like that and they do pretty well. It depends on the brand, of course. But yeah, I mean, the ones that we've tried have done pretty well. Yeah.
It looks like what you're saying is that, you know, brands or small businesses are going to spend probably more time producing content now than before, and they'll actually have more time to do it as well because it's fewer levers to pull. So it's more mm-hmm. of just understanding your customer and, you know, based on feedback, kind of testing different angles and different ways of selling your product. There's still people that are uncomfortable filming themselves or filming in general, mm-hmm. like video content. How important do you think it is to have video versus still images in terms of creatives using?
I think you want to have a mix. You know, I mean, the brands that we've worked with that have done this well, they've developed a guide for customers that they'll send out as a PDF. If they get some glowing review, they'll say, hey, you know, could you check this out? Like, we'd like to pay you, or we'd like to give you a big discount to do this. And it's a guide with a how-to, what we're kind of looking for. And you know, it walks them through it, taking static and images. Yeah, it depends on the person. A lot of people, you know, they think it's too much, you know, doing a video. And I think, but if you guide them correctly, it can be done fairly easily. I mean, there are services that you can use too to walk through this. But I think it's best done just with like some sort of a guide and following up that way.
So last thing I want to talk about, and I think it's just very interesting because the Nordics are still a very strange place when it comes to return on ad spend and expectations of profitability and those kind of things. You work with a lot of different clients from US and other places. What do you say, like in like more general way, but what should a brand expect in terms of return on ad spend, for example, running campaigns in the US? Meaning here in Norway, I think the average right now is like 6 or 7 ROAS in Norway when you run campaigns. And when I talk to other brands that are trying to succeed in the US or in Australia or something else, it's usually much harder to get to those kind of numbers. So you see more numbers than I do in terms of those markets. What's kind of your general idea?
So we all sort of got spoiled early on doing meta ads by looking at the meta ad reporting on ad spend and being able to trust that. And I think that at this point, you really can't trust the numbers that are coming from meta because of opt-outs and because of, you know, so many of them are view-based. And so I think that's important to put in context. I think that we have to become financial masters of our numbers. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we used to just look at return on ad spend and say, hey, great, run with it. And I think where we are now in the United States and in Canada, and, you know, let's say the UK, you're looking at a lot of other pieces as a part of that. So you're looking at new customer CPA, you're looking at the return on ad spend. You're looking at, you know, a lot of times people will put in what they call a DAM, a delayed attribution multiplier. So you'll say, I know that if on a 1 day click, my campaigns are at a 0.7, by 28 days from a click basis, I'll be at a 2.8 or whatever. Yeah. Okay. So that's a big thing that people have had to work on. So I think all that in context, if you look across brands that are doing really well right now, you know, if you look at just the return on ad spend that they're getting, and let's look at it, you know, it'd be a holistic return on ad spend of their, you know, marketing efficiency ratio. You know, I think it's like 2 to 3, like it's not what it was. Yeah. And there are brands that are scaling that are, an MER of 1.8, you know, and they know that their retention game is really strong. So they're going to make up the money that way. So I think it depends on each brand. It depends on how they've done the overall numbers and the calculations and the financial kind of rundown that needs to happen in order to be able to answer that. But yeah, I mean, I would say if you're in that place and, you know, you're seeing good numbers, then keep it running for as long as you can, because the competition is going to continue to increase.
Yes, that's what I keep telling people.
You know, I also think you need to I've had to become much better at looking at financial metrics from businesses, which is not something I used to do. Yeah. And I've had to really, you know, what are your costs of goods sold? Like how much money are we spending on Facebook ads? Like, and what is the number we actually need to hit on a daily basis and a weekly basis to be able to know that you're making money? You know, so that's something that we've really had to dig into, because we got spoiled so long. Everything was like, well, on Meta, it's an 8X, whatever, keep it running. We know it's making money. We're printing money. Well, now that's not the case here. And you have to be much smarter about that diving in. So,
yeah. So enjoy it while it lasts, but start paying more attention to your actual numbers instead of just platform reporting in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. Great, Andrew. You know, thank you so much for your time. Where's the best place to kind of follow you and stay updated on everything you're doing?
Yeah. So, on X at Andrew Foxwell, you can also check out anything about our two memberships that we have at foxwelldigital.com/membership. We have a membership for people that are in Meta ads. We have a membership for people that are in PPC doing Google ads. Other than that, those are the best places to follow me, or on LinkedIn. And look forward to hearing from you.
That's great. Yeah, I'm a happy member, so I can vouch for your memberships. It's great stuff.
And oh, thanks, man.
It's a good community as well.
Thank you, man.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
En siste ting før du går. 18. september så arrangerer meg og Marte Netthandelskonferansen. Netthandelskonferansen den ene gangen i året vi alle møtes, cirka 200 andre nettbutikker, for å bli inspirert, men ikke minst få konkrete råd du kan ta med deg hjem og implementere din nettbutikk samme dag. Så hvis du har lyst til å være med på konferansen vår, så anbefaler jeg deg å gå innom netthandelskonferansen.no og sikre deg en billett. Vi ble utsolgt i god tid før konferansen i fjor, så sjekk ut netthandelskonferansen.no hvis du har lyst til å bli med andre nettbutikker, bli inspirert, få nye venner, få nye bekjentskaper, spise nydelig mat, hilse på meg og Marte, ha det gøy. Så netthandelskonferansen.no 18. september. Vi håper du tar turen.